Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Welcome to Buckets in the 503. I'm your host, Naewon Thompson, and I have a special guest here from Los Angeles, California. He was a 1987 Crossroads champion at his high school, former assistant coach at Loyola Marymount and University of Oregon, director of grassroots basketball for Adidas from 97 to 09, and is currently the director of client management for pro athletes. Welcome, Darren Kalish.
Great to be here, Naewon.
Good to have you, man. You've had an impressive basketball journey. I don't think a lot of people understand how much you've actually influenced a lot of the basketball that happens around the nation and the different things that you've done. Can you walk us through a little bit of the beginning of your journey, starting in high school and some of the people that you may have played with?
Yeah, you know, originally, like as you said, I'm originally from Los Angeles and played at Crossroads High School, which was a small school. And it's actually pretty popular today as one of the better programs in Southern California. But at the time, we were also one of the top programs for the private schools in Los Angeles, and had an opportunity to play against a lot of top players. My first high school game, as a matter of fact, was against Brian Williams, who later changed his name to Bison Dele and played for the Chicago Bulls. Also on that team was Jason Matthews, who played at the University of Pittsburgh, had a great career there. They had a lot of Division I players, but people like Stevie Thompson, who's now the current assistant coach at Oregon State, Chris Mills, Doug Beacons, a lot of the Crenshaw program. Those are a lot of the guys that I played with growing up playing AAU basketball.
And were they on your high school team or just guys that you played against throughout the AAU?
Yeah, these are guys that that I played AAU with primarily. We also had several Division I players come through Crossroads. A lot of you guys might remember that Baron Davis played at UCLA. He's a Crossroads alum, as well as Austin Crozier, who played a long time in the league for the Indiana Pacers. So
nice. And then, you know, 1987, you win a championship over there at Crossroads. And then it's time to go off to college and you end up over at Loyola Marymount.
Yeah.
Talk about that journey a little bit as far as your college goes.
Yeah, you know, I was a decent player in high school and got recruited lightly by Division II and III schools, and then also applied to Loyola Marymount, which is right there in Los Angeles. And at the time, Loyola Marymount had a top basketball program. That's when Hank Gathers and Bo Kimble transferred from USC to Loyola, and was fortunate enough to enroll in school there. And quite honestly, wasn't good enough to play on the varsity team, but had an opportunity through some connections. I had worked summer camps and things with Coach Westhead and got an opportunity to be a student manager on the basketball team. So that's kind of the path that I took. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that my journey through my basketball journey continues today at 54 years old. And so that's the great part about the game of basketball. You don't necessarily need to be a great player to have a career in the game, or a great coach to have a career. But there are opportunities in different aspects of the business of basketball.
No, absolutely. You know, what a lot of people don't understand is the billion-dollar industry, and there's lots of different avenues you can do more than just on the court, and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. So building connections is extremely important. That's something that you've always been really good at. And through that process, you know, I know you built a lot of connections along the way. From your time as being an assistant at Loyola Marymount, then you went over to U of O as an assistant as well. Talk about that experience a little bit.
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, as I said before, I worked a lot of the summer camps at Loyola, Pepperdine, UCLA, a lot of the local schools in Los Angeles, met a lot of different people, had an opportunity for college coaches like Jim Herrick, Tom Asbury, Paul Westhead to see what a hard worker I was, got a chance to get to know me and my personality. And so there was opportunities to get into coaching, at the AAU level, at the high school level, and also at camps as well.
And when you were at those camps, like, who were some of your biggest influences in coaching and leadership early on?
I think I took a little bit from all those coaches. Like, as I said, you know, Jim Herrick, Tom Asbury, who was at Pepperdine at the time, Paul Westhead, who was the head coach at Loyola Marymount. Later on, I worked for John Olive, who was a former assistant for Rolly Massimino at Villanova. He was Rolly Massimino's first recruit. And so there was a lot of influence from a lot of different people.
And how would you say, like, your coaching philosophy has evolved over the years? You know, I'm sure, you know, as all of us as coaches, you know, when we first start, we might think we know some stuff, you know, from being a player. But then as you're around, you know, older coaches and you start getting that mentorship, you know, you start to see the game in a little bit different perspective. Talk about that, how your perspective may have changed or evolved over those years.
Yeah, I think my perspective has evolved because the game has evolved. And I think that, you know, things that are, you know, terms and the style of play today is different than it was, you know, 10 years ago, different than it was 20 years ago, different than it was 30 years ago. So I think that one of the things, as you know, I'm currently an assistant coach at Southridge High School, have kind of grown up. I have a son who's a junior guard at Southridge, and have kind of coached him through the youth levels and things. And so I've gotten an opportunity to stay around the game and to see the game change and evolve, whether that's terminology, style of play. Of course, as I said before, I'm 54 years old. So I'm from, you know, when I was in high school, I was coached and influenced by old school coaches. I also was fortunate as a high school player to attend five-star basketball camp, which at the time was in Coriopolis, Pennsylvania. And out of a lot of the top players in the country were there, and a lot of the top coaches were there. So I had an opportunity to learn from and meet people like Bobby Knight, Rick Pitino, Pete Gillen, Brendan Malone, a lot of the legends of college basketball coaching, and Seth Greenberg was a coach. So I had an opportunity to meet a lot of different people, to learn how basketball is different in different areas of the country. So it's been quite a journey.
And when you were an assistant coach at Loyola Marymount from 94 to 96, and then you moved over to be an assistant at the University of Oregon for a year, what was that transition like? I know Loyola Marymount played that super fast style of basketball, and then you go to University of Oregon. Talk about that transition from being a coach who plays like 7 seconds or less, then going to the University of Oregon.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, I worked for a time with Coach Westhead, so I got the chance to work in that system. Then it evolved in 1990, actually. After the 90 season, Coach Westhead got a job with the Denver Nuggets and went on to the NBA. and Loyola hired John Olive, who was an assistant at Villanova. So that Villanova at Rolly Massimino style of coaching and playing was I had an opportunity to learn that. And that obviously wasn't as up-tempo as Coach Westhead. And then working for at the University of Oregon for Jerry Green. Jerry Green, prior to being at the University of Oregon, was an assistant coach at Kansas under Roy Williams, who he grew up with and was one of his closest friends. So there was a heavy North Carolina and Kansas influence at the University of Oregon at the time that I was there. So it was great to get an opportunity to learn different styles, the different techniques, different ways of teaching. And I think, you know, that's the reality of what basketball is. There's just like in anything, there's different ways to skin a cat. And so I think that I was very fortunate to learn a lot of the different styles and to be able to pick things up. And today and throughout the years, I've kind of picked and choose things that I like and things that I don't like or things that I would do different. So I think it's made me ultimately a better coach as time has gone on.
No, definitely. You know, being able to see all those different styles and understand what works and then seeing what personnel works with depending on the style that you teach as well is very important. Now, you're only at Oregon for 1 year before moving on to probably, you know, one of your bigger roles in the basketball world in influencing it, being the director of grassroots basketball for Adidas. I know during that time, you know, you shaped a lot of stuff as far as different AAU scenes and tournaments and funding different players. Talk about that role a little bit in the type of stuff that you did to help influence the game of basketball to where it is today.
Yeah. So Jerry Green, who I was working for at the University of Oregon, was hired after the 97 season to be the head coach at University of Tennessee. And I had an opportunity and, you know, I was a West Coast recruiter. He had moved to the southeast part of the country. And so I was basically out of a job looking for what my next move was, had a couple of coaching opportunities. And there was an opportunity, there was a job that was located in Portland, ironically, that was being in charge of grassroots basketball, working directly for Sonny Vaccaro, the legend, former.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Nike legend and legend at Adidas. He's known for signing, obviously, Michael Jordan to Nike, known for Tracy McGrady, Kobe Bryant at Adidas. So it was an opportunity not only to work for a guy like that, but also to be plugged into the network of the top AAU coaches throughout the country was very appealing to me, particularly at the time I thought, hey, I want to stay in coaching and to be a better recruiter and to expand my contacts in the recruiting game. It would be great to get an opportunity to work with all these coaches from around the country. So that's the move that I made. And it was a great move. And to the point where once I got there, I stayed there for 13 years. I was fortunate enough to meet my wife there. She's an apparel designer who worked at Adidas for a long time, now works with Nike. But had an opportunity again. Like I said, I'm a guy that from Southern California, never played college basketball, but had been around the game and the business of basketball and had an opportunity to be around and watch and meet some of the top players in the country, you know, guys like Dwight Howard, Josh Smith, Sebastian Telfair, Derek Favors, Drew Holiday, Stephen Curry, Russell Westbrook, all those, the Lopez twins, a lot of the players now, quite frankly, that are starting to retire out of the league, a lot of those players I've been watching play since they've been in seventh and eighth grade. So it was a great experience, and again, another opportunity to be around basketball and to be involved in the mix.
Yeah, that's awesome that you said that, you know, that you decided that you understood at a very young part of your coaching career how important recruiting was. I think a lot of times what happens in Oregon, you know, in the basketball here, you know, people get, downgraded because they recruit. But that's a part of the game if you're trying to get to that next level. Like if you can't recruit, you know, you can't move on to the next level. And some people have bigger aspirations of just staying at, you know, the local thing or just taking money from kids and just trying to so-called develop them to be, you know, good high school players or whatnot. Recruiting is a very important part, and that's what you decide to go do, and you did it at the highest level. Talk about some of the teams that you worked with at Adidas as the director of basketball that you helped launch.
Yeah. One of the outside of working with some of the top AAU programs at the time, the comes to mind the DC Assault, headed by Curtis Malone, guys like Mike Beasley came out of that program. Jeff Green, who's still playing in the NBA, came out of that program. Dermar Johnson, who played at Cincinnati, I remember was a really good player out of that program. The Atlanta Celtics, that's where Dwight Howard, Javaris Crittenden, Josh Smith on down the line, Donnell Harvey, a lot of great players. EBO out of Fresno, California, where the Lopez twins played, Matt Barnes, Chris Jeffries, Jared Bayless, a lot of top NBA players came out of that program. We had programs all over the country, and at the time, Adidas was very dominant, even more so than Nike, in my opinion, in the grassroots game. I think a lot of that was because of the effort that Adidas put into it. It was an area of importance, and so I had a chance to work with a lot of great teams. But one of the biggest things that I think, and one of the things that I'm pretty proud of, we created during the time I was there. We had, prior to Sonny Vaccaro leaving Adidas, Sonny Vaccaro started the ABCD camp when he was with Nike. And then when he switched over to Adidas, started working for Adidas, he owned the name of the camp and the rights to the camp. So he brought that to Adidas. And then later on, around 2006 or so, he left Adidas and went to Reebok and brought the camp with him. So we started the Adidas Superstar Camp to compete with the Nike All-American Camp, the Reebok ABCD Camp, and then we had the Adidas Superstar Camp, which I created, which wasn't a different concept, but it was made up of the players that were part of our AAU programs. And then, but shortly after that time, when we started, a couple years after we started the Adidas Superstar Camp, there was kind of a mandate at Adidas to kind of get away from the camps, the All-American Camp format, and do something different. And we created something called Adidas Nations. And that was basically a group of teams from different regions of the world made up of the top players that we were associated with. So in the United States, we actually had two teams, but you know, guys like Drew Holiday, Derek Favors, Dwight Howard, on down the line, several future NBA stars played for those teams. And Lance Stevenson was a part of that. And Eric Gordon was a part of that. So just an opportunity to meet some of the top players and see them and watch them grow and work with them. And at the time, one of the other great parts about it was is that for each of those programs, we had teams in Asia and Africa, Australia, on all the different continents, and they were all coached by former NBA coaches. So Paul Silas, Terry Stotts, Larry Krystkowiak, Eddie Johnson, a lot of NBA influence was a part of that program, Lionel Hollins. So I also got a chance to meet, you know, and spend time with several great coaches doing that as well. So I have a lot of proud moments and was involved in a lot of great things at Adidas and a lot of great players and people.
No, that's awesome. You know, not many people get that opportunity to be able to speak to that many great coaches and pick their brain on different philosophies and things that they like to do and being able to see it all up front and close like that, like you have. And then from the grassroots at Adidas from 97 to 09 and building that huge program, what made you decide to leave that that world and get into another part of the basketball side, which is director of client management for pro athletes? How did you make that jump?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. I happened toward the end of my time at Adidas. I became more involved in actually recruiting the end. Not only earlier on when I was involved in grassroots basketball, I identified and established relationships with a lot of the top high school players. And then they started growing older, going to college. And then I later switched to recruiting the players once they were drafted in the NBA and signing those players to endorsement agreements. And so I happened to be in a meeting, and the player was, full disclosure, was Michael Beasley. We had a meeting to present our brand, Adidas, to him. He had Nike and Adidas and the other major shoe brands that were going after him. And I was in that meeting, and he had his agent in the meeting. He also had his what became a future business manager in the meeting, who is now my current boss. And he owned a firm, a business management firm, which is similar to what people would refer to as a financial advising firm. But we call ourselves business managers, and we handle everything off court in terms of a professional athlete's life, off court or off field. And the gentleman that was in that meeting had a firm that was primarily focused on baseball. He had several Major League Baseball clients and was interested in making a transition to the basketball world. And Beasley was one of his first guys that he went after and recruited. And we kind of met and hit it off in that meeting. And he felt that maybe a person like me who had relationships with players, knew the world and the business of basketball and the agents and things like that, would be valuable for a firm like his. So I was fortunate enough to establish a relationship and got offered a job. And really, there's kind of a through line through everything that I've done, obviously, not only related to the game of basketball, but from a relationship and recruiting standpoint, that was done whether I was an AAU coach, a college coach, worked for a shoe company and ran the camps and tournaments and leagues, and also working for a financial firm that handles professional athletes.
Yeah, recruiting is definitely a huge part of the basketball game, and building those connections and being able to communicate to people a vision that you see, and then being able to execute that vision as well is huge. And so, you know, for people out there, understand, like, there's a lot of different parts of the game that you can do. If you're a great recruiter, be that. If you can be a great AAU coach, do that. You know, if you're just a great coach, do that. If you want to be a ref, you can do that. But, you know, just make sure that you're doing your piece of the puzzle. But there's a lot of different avenues in the game. If you love the game, you can always do something with it. And with that, you know, you've always continued to coach through that whole time. I know we've been coaching together for shoot, over a decade now, I think. And so where does that love of coaching come from for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously growing up, I played all different types of sports. So obviously was introduced to coaching and sports at an early age. I also, being a Showtime Lakers fan, when I was young, I wanted to be Pat Riley. I always, even probably more so than wanting to be Magic Johnson, I wanted to be a coach. And then just the path that I, you know, took throughout.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
My AAU coaches, I played for a middle school AAU program called the B&B Spurs. And Chris Mills, I mentioned earlier, Doug Meekins, it was primarily made up of a lot of the inner city Los Angeles players and coaches, guys that coached at Fremont High School, guys that coached at Crenshaw High School, guys that coached at Manual Arts High School, a lot of the inner city schools in Los Angeles. And those were the people that I met and people that I grew up with. And just kind of fell in love with the game and was around the game all the time and kind of just went from there.
Now, you've been around a lot of great players, right? You've seen them, you've seen their habits. It's the same thing with coaches. I know at your high school you have some high-level actors as well that you went to school with as well. Being around that type of those high-level people who have succeeded at that high level, what are the characteristics that separates the good from the great players that you've seen over the years?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, primarily it's hard work, dedication. I also think being a good person, not taking shortcuts. You know, I don't think it's that difficult to. You know, I think it's, you know, it's difficult to become an NBA player, of course, but I just think it's not that difficult to be a successful person in life, no matter what you do. If you work hard at it, you stay disciplined, you know, keep your nose clean and do the right thing. So I've definitely seen that. And I think that being around a lot of people that have become, you know, successful also helped me realize that if I do those things, work hard and do the right thing and have the right attitude and treat people with respect and treat people the right way, good things could happen to me, and they have.
When you're looking at it from a coach's perspective and working with players like your son or other players, what are like the top three habits that you like to emphasize when you're working someone out?
You know, one of the things, first of all, I think that, you know, nowadays, as you do, you're working with your son a lot and rebounding or whatever it may be and trying to give your son pointers, or if it's another player on our team. Or I think that obviously going game speed, you know, focusing on the process, not the result. So if we're shooting multiple shots and we try to, you know, get at least 300 shots up a day if we can at minimum, you know, if you miss, you got to learn how to bounce back. It's not about worrying about the miss. It's about making the next shot. So it's the hard work. It's going game speed. It's the repetition. It's the grinding, the grind, all those things that I think prepare you to be mentally tough, all those things are very important.
And for you, you know, going back to your days as in the AAU scene, how did you go about finding the players and identifying, you know, those top players? In better words, how would you tell a player who's trying to get noticed by someone like yourself in that industry? How would you tell them to go about and how to get noticed?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of people say, you know, you'll talk to college coaches and they'll say, hey, if you're a good enough player, we'll find you. I think that to a certain degree, that is the case. They will. I relied primarily, particularly at Adidas. We had a network of our grassroots basketball, our AAU coaches across the country, who were all in their own particular areas looking to identify the top players in their particular area. So those guys would tell me about players. And then obviously I would look at trusted scouts. I remember during the time that I was, you know, so to speak, in the prime of my career in grassroots basketball at Adidas, there's a gentleman by the name of Dave Tellep, and he had a scouting service. And he was kind of the guy that was at the forefront and a guy that I really trusted his opinion on whether a guy was a high-level player or not. So I did rely on scouting services and things like that. And, you know, obviously in those days, the social media and the internet weren't, what they are today. So I think it's a lot easier to get noticed today than it was before. But I think, again, you know, if you have that hard work, the dedication, and obviously you play against the top players and go to the right events and things like that, you're going to get an opportunity.
Now, you've been able to see a lot of basketball around the nation, different styles of play, depending on the region that you're in. How do you feel like Oregon stacks up now nationally in terms of basketball talent?
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting question, and I'm glad you asked me that, because that's another one of the great things, the great experiences that I had working in grassroots basketball and just my basketball journey. I was fortunate enough, whether it was going to the camp that I mentioned as a high school player or in grassroots basketball for Adidas, I would go to New York and spend a lot of time in New York. I'd go to Indianapolis, Indiana, to watch Eric Gordon and Mike Conley and Greg Oden when they're in high school, Josh McRoberts, Daquan Cook, all those guys. In Los Angeles, I'm obviously very familiar with because I grew up there, players throughout time, and you know, the Baron Davis of the world I watched. But I think, you know, I've always been impressed with the level of basketball in Portland. I think Portland's an underrated basketball town. I think that, you know, because of our population here, and I consider myself now, you know, now that I've lived here for 20 plus years, an Oregonian, but I think that it's a little bit underrated here, and I think there's a lot of talent in Oregon. I don't think there's the numbers that there are in some of the big, you know, whether it's Los Angeles, Chicago, the big cities, New York, now even Dallas and Houston, some of the bigger cities in Texas or Florida. But I think it's good basketball in Oregon.
And for kids that are in high school, mm-hmm. right? If you're a freshman to a senior, how important is exposure versus development for these young players?
Yeah. I mean, I do believe that exposure is necessary and somewhat important, but I believe development is more important. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, if you develop your skills, you're athletically, you know, talented enough to play, let's say it's whatever level that is, Division I, let's say, I think that your skills in developing your development as a basketball player are more important than the exposure and the hype, for sure. However, you know, I do think that that exposure and hype does play a role, but I just think that development and skills are more important.
No, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. You know, it's always important to keep the development going no matter what you're doing. You're playing AAU, you're playing high school, you still have to develop, you still have to do the weight training, you still have to do all the things. However, exposure is important as well, because if you're just developing in the garage all the time, right, and no one knows about it, well, it's kind of hard to get seen and get to that spot that you want to get to. So you still have to do it. I still would say, you know, it's still a 70-30 or maybe a 60-40 if your skill set is good enough. But the development piece is definitely the most important. And as both as a coach and a basketball parent, as we are, how do you navigate that dynamic of, you know, of coaching your son, training him, but then also like still showing that you care, you know, more than the game itself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, that's a difficult dynamic, I think, for any parent to coach their son or daughter, their child. But I think that, you know, when in a team setting, I very rarely coach my son in a team setting. And as an assistant coach on a team, that's probably, you know, that's probably appropriate. But so a lot of the coaching that I do with my son is during his workouts, and also coaching him, or, you know, I often send him clips or different things that I hear about from different coaches, or things to work on, or words of wisdom or advice. A lot of those types of things, for me, are even more important, because, you know, I feel that I'm very fortunate to have learned a lot about the game for a long period of time from a lot of different people. And I want to pass that along to him and, you know, the other players that I coach.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, you've had such a diverse background in basketball, from the coaching side to the administrative side to the management side of the game. What are some of the behind the scenes side of college or Adidas that a lot of people don't realize that is happening behind the scenes to make all the magic happen?
Yeah, you know, I think today, you know, with, you know, the popularity in terms of social media and online, I think that people have a better idea of what really does go on, as opposed to years ago when there wasn't so much exposure. So, you know, I wouldn't say there's anything, you know, I think that's very similar to, you know, to the way things are now, the way that it was back then. And, I don't think there's, you know, it's just for me, you know, the through line is that I've always really cherished the relationships, whether it's with coaches or players, you know, hanging around the locker room, hanging around the fellas, you know, keeps me young, working with players and families. You know, I've always really enjoyed doing that.
Now, you know, there's a lot of people out there who complain about the system now and different programs and different things and how different people do it. If there's one thing that you could change about the AU system or develop in today's environment, what would that be?
I think it would be, you know, I do think that it has become more popular. Skill development has become more popular than it was in the past. And I think, you know, people would tell you that today kids are a lot more skilled than they used to be. But obviously, I believe, as I stated earlier, that substance is the most important thing. So working hard, you know, being a good person, doing the right things, those are the important things. And the hype and the things that, you know, just because a guy might have a lot of followers on Instagram, you know, and he's a basketball player, doesn't mean he's a great basketball player. So I think some of those things, you know, I just would hope that as some of these things change and, you know, younger players are becoming more popular for their Instagram account or things like that, I think that we have to be careful that it doesn't go too much in that direction of hype and not enough of substance. So I think that the substance is where it needs to be, and we need to not only kind of continue to develop from a skill standpoint in terms of the game, but also, you know, be of being a good person and having substance.
You know, definitely. You know, some guys I can think of off the top of my head that are like that today, right? You have like Julian Newman, who was a YouTube sensation, but mm-hmm. you know, when it came down to it, he wasn't that great of a hooper, right? Mm-hmm. 14,000 dribbles before a shot a lot of times. Mm-hmm. You have a guy like Mikey Williams, who you talk about being a good person, and obviously got into a little bit of trouble and now is down there in Sacramento State, and you know, it just looks like another college player who was a good athlete, but you know, IQ doesn't seem to be there. But then on the flip side of that, you have someone like Jared McCain, who has a huge following, but seems to be a really good person, good human being, and is doing really well over there in Philadelphia. So, you know, obviously you can see both sides of the spectrum. All those guys are huge sensations online, but you can tell the ones who had substance and the ones who kind of fell into that trap of, you know, liking the fame a little bit more than the game. So
absolutely. So and I think that's a great point that you make, because I always, you know, you always, especially when you're recruiting, when coaches, a college coach or even an NBA team is looking for that ideal player, I think it's very important. They want to know, does this player have a love of the game, or does this player love the things that the game brings him or her? You know, and I think that's very important. And that's the kind of the substance that we're talking about. In order to be a really good player, I mean, there's a lot of talented players out there, but to really maximize your talent and to be as good as you can be, you have to be that guy that loves the game.
Absolutely. I see that with some players, you know, in today's game in the high school, you know, or we're kind of more in the know of a lot of the kids that's out there. And we know the ones who love the game and the ones who just love what the game gives them. Right. And so, you know, we understand what that is. And we're like, okay, well, you know, I know for us, we always tell our kids, like, listen, we've seen this story before. We know what's going to happen with these kids. We understand what's going to happen with these kids. He's not on the radar yet, but this kid's going to end up on the radar because he's busting his butt. I've always, you know, talked about guys I went to high school with that weren't that good that end up being D1 or D2 guys, but no one would have saw that their freshman, sophomore, junior year even. Some not till after they got out of high school till they developed. So, you know, it's a long road, man, for basketball. I shouldn't say long. It's longer than they believe it is. It's not just through high school. You have to develop the work ethic in high school so it can carry you through college and the rest of your life like it has done for you.
Yeah.
Still being able to do it at age 54 and being in the basketball world. So it can take you a lot of different places around the world if you do it right. All right. So ending here with some quick hitter questions for you coming out first. What was your favorite event that you were a part of with Adidas?
Oh, that's a difficult. I think that I have to go back to what I mentioned before, the Adidas Nations tournament that we created. So we created those national teams all over the world, and then we'd have an event at the end where we would all come together and play, and just getting an opportunity to, you know, meet people from all over the world. Had a chance prior to that big tournament that we had. I had an opportunity to go to some different places, and particularly a trip that I will never forget. It was a trip to Africa, went to Senegal and Mali and played some teams over there in shared culture in Africa with the sports minister and the prime minister of Mali. Those are, you know, memories that I'll have forever. And so I'd have to say Adidas Nations.
Most talented player that you've coached or seen up close?
I'd probably say that that's a tough question, very difficult. There's been a lot of really good players, but that I've coached or been around, I have to say that Baron Davis is a guy that I look to just because, and when I look back at my time at Oregon, coaching at Oregon, he was a guard. I recruited him. He ended up going to UCLA. But I just remember he was kind of the standard at the time. So I'd have to say Baron Davis, and obviously I know him well. He attended my high school and won the state championship about, I think, 10 or 11 years after we did.
Okay.
87, yeah.
Nice. That's not a bad guy right there. Yeah. He was pretty special. Best piece of advice a college coach ever gave you?
Oh, wow. I think that I've gotten a lot of different advice, but I think that one of the things that sticks with me is be yourself, you know, in different, whether it's different coaching jobs or your different roles within a basketball staff. I think that being myself and doing the way that the style that fits me and that I'm comfortable with, not being someone that I'm not or doing things that don't fit my personality. So I'd have to say being myself, be yourself, particularly when you're coaching, do it the way that in your style, the way that you do it.
What's one drill every player from youth to pro should master?
I think that's a tough question. Very difficult. There's a lot of aspects of the game that are important. So, you know, I'd have to say probably in my mind, whether that's right or wrong, I think shooting is very important. And that's something that I think that you have to, repetitions are very important. So it's over and over and over and over again, that muscle memory that you want to try to, you know, create and replicate every time. So I think that that's just an example of, if you put in, you'll get out. So the harder you work at shooting the basketball, the better shooter you're going to be. And I think that's an important aspect of the game. But, you know, personally, I'm more of a defensive guy. And so the guys that play defense and rebound and play hard and steal the ball and dive on the floor is something that excites me as a basketball coach.
And one word to best describe your approach to the game.
Intense and 110%. I know it sounds cliche, but all those things that I just talked about on the defensive side of the ball, a lot of those things are about effort. And so I believe that you make kids believe, and if you get the best effort, you're going to win a lot of basketball games.
What advice do you give young kids and players who dream of going pro?
The main advice is, I think it's important not to destroy their dreams. It's good to have dreams, to dream big, but I also think it's also important to know the reality of how difficult that is. It's possible, but it takes hard work, dedication, discipline, all those types of things. So that's what I like to teach.
Well, that's awesome. Good nuggets there. Well, Darren, we appreciate you coming on the podcast. It's always a pleasure to get knowledge from someone that's been around the game for, you know, over what, almost coming up on 40 years in the game, from being a high school champion to now directing client management for pros. There's a whole gauntlet of stuff in between, and I'm looking forward to coaching with you in the future. It's always fun, man. I appreciate you on the pod.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. I just want to say that for you and Curtis, I know, who have this podcast, I think it's a great thing you guys are doing. Again, like I said earlier, I've always thought that Portland is an underrated place. It's a tight knit basketball community. And, you know, I'm a part of it, but I'm from L.A., so I'm not really a part of it. You guys are a tight-knit group, but I appreciate you guys accepting me.
Yeah, we got a lot of L.A. imports down here in Oregon that, you know, that like to hang around and stuff. So, no, it's all love, though. I love it all, you know what I'm saying? Even some of the backhanded compliments that we get, or people, you know, trying to say stuff. I take it all in stride, and I love it, man. I'm just love the game. We just do this as a passion. So, you know, I'm passionate about the game. You're passionate about the game. And that's why we work well together. So that's what it's about. So, again, man, appreciate you having me on the pod. And that'll do it for this episode of Buckets in the 503. Stay blessed.